All right, everyone, welcome to the podcast. I'm here with Jawanza Hobson. Jawanza, go ahead and tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Yo, my name is J.K. Hobson. Jawanza Hobson is my real name, but Jawanza Kalungi Hobson is not a good stage name. So again, I go by J.K. Hobson. I'm a stand-up comedian. I live here in Saigon, a former musician. Used to play in a bunch of bands back in the days, and I moved to Saigon to Vietnam on a Fulbright scholarship in 2016. And decided to make my home here for a while, and it's been like almost 5 years now.
Wow, excellent, man. I applaud anyone who can make the move abroad. It's usually pretty scary and tough. But you've been here for 5 years, so that is props to you, man. We would say, how many Saigon burns do you have?
I've only gotten two. I've got, in fact, one. You mean a Saigon kiss?
I thought, was it Saigon burn or
Do you
Saigon
mean
kiss? We
well, if we're talking about the same thing, a Saigon kiss is when you're wearing shorts. It's not one of those things you pay for in Bui Vien before you go there.
okay.
A Saigon kiss is when you're wearing shorts and you burn your leg on the side of your motorcycle exhaust pipe, which gets really hot after you're riding for a long time. That's a
That's
Saigon
right.
kiss.
That's right. And the Saigon burn is the STD. Got you. No, I'm joking. Joking,
Oh,
jokes.
okay. I don't have that. I came with that. So I didn't, I was like, oh, that's a burn. Okay, this is business as usual, man. Let's go.
Well, we have a pretty big topic to talk about. This is blown up in the States. It seemed to come out of nowhere. Critical race theory, CRT. First, let's just talk about our perceptions of critical race theory. We may be wrong, we may be right. You have actual experience with it in the classroom. I remember reading about it many years ago. However, now it's the hot topic. So let's go ahead and talk about it. From your time, what do you remember about critical race theory?
So it was a while ago when I was in university, but my knowledge of critical race theory is that it's not so much a theory that you indoctrinate someone with as much as it is a methodology through which you use to study society. Right, to study, and basically it's using law or studying the laws, especially in the United States, as they pertain to race, to kind of really like deconstruct and examine like what is really going on. How is the law used to marginalize people based on race, and how America or the United States has developed as a result of these laws and as a result of these interactions. So it's a methodology that you use to study that uses race and the law as a lens.
Yeah,
That's
I
my
mean,
understanding.
from my understanding and from what I can remember, it's basically you're linking all of these like injustices, and you're trying to figure out the common thread, which is again race. Now, one of the things that I have read that people have an issue with is by focusing on race and primarily on race, you're taking the focus away from other factors. I know for a lot of liberals, far, far, far left liberals, classism is something that they throw out constantly, like, oh, class, 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 class is a bigger issue than race. And to certain extents, I think there's, examples where, there's other factors at play. Race may not be the only factor or is not the only factor. But in a lot of cases, race is a factor, right? People like to throw out the example about crime and how, you know, where you have Black people and they live in these crime these high crime areas, and these high crime areas happen to be impoverished areas. And so therefore that explains their interactions with the police, except it doesn't. Because when you look at the data and you look at the crime of white people who also live in impoverished conditions, while you do see, you know, police shootings and examples of police brutality, you don't see it at the same rate. And so there is, we get back. And also it doesn't take into account that not every Black person who's a victim of police brutality lives or comes from poverty. So that's the other thing as far as this too. So I'm like, I remember getting pulled over constantly. I never got pulled over as many times as I did when I went to TCU in Fort Worth. You know, I was in a very rich neighborhood. And I remember a cop pulled me over and he was like, "What are you doing in this neighborhood?" I was like, "I'm a student here. My parking sticker's on the back of the car. What are you? You're a TCU police officer. Should you see the you pulled me over from behind? Did you see that?"
"I'm a police officer. I can't read."
has the nerve to say, you know, there's been a few break-ins in the neighborhood. And I was like, "Hell yeah, I know. They stole my computer and my books. I'm a victim. What you been doing? You're pulling over people with TCU parking places. Maybe you should start there. Change your methods."
That's like That's like the Dave Chappelle bit about, he's like, "My house is too nice for me." And, you know, the cop comes in and he's got his stuff all over the house. You know, anyway, I won't repeat it.
I used to laugh at that joke until Botham John happened in Dallas. And then that joke just all of a sudden just wasn't as funny anymore. Because it just like, well,
real shit.
It really happens. So it's like
real shit, man. This guy has pictures of his family all over the house. You know, I think what you're saying is really valid. And what's interesting about it is Kimberly Crenshaw, who's the creator, the original creator of critical race theory. She's a Black scholar, and she's also the creator of the theory of intersectionality, right? Which says that, you know, we all experience the world differently because of the different identities that we occupy. So I experience racism differently than a Black woman, right? Because Black woman's experiencing racism, but she's also experiencing sexism, right? Never mind if she's a queer Black woman, then it's like, you know, it's homophobia, racism. So there's all the, and we all occupy different identity. Even you and I might experience racism differently, right? I'm Caribbean American, right? Whereas I'm not sure you're African American, like your ancestors are from the United States,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, my ancestors are mixed. So I am African American, but I am also former slave owner. So that I have a mix, a true union of the two sides of that coin.
You look really young for your age. You're a former slave owner. Wow. Are you drinking baby blood? I knew it wasn't a filter. God damn it, you look good.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey man, you got it.
But also, speaking of that, look. You gotta do what you can, man.
Yeah, you gotta do what you can.
You know, these kids ain't making podcasts. You might as well drink their blood, you know.
But
all I was gonna say, you know, even by my age and your age, we have a little bit of an age difference. We experience life and the world a little bit differently. So intersectionality, you know, tries to acknowledge that, you know, that we occupy all these different identities within ourselves, you know, and experience the world and especially the United States differently because of them. So I just wanted to add that to what you're saying. Yeah, it's not just race. Yeah, it's class, you know, it's gender. It's all kinds of things, you know, but just because there are all these kinds of things doesn't mean we shouldn't look at them and examine, you know, the effects that they have on people and on the law.
Yeah. And I do get the fear, me being, because I've been in a situation where, you know, I'm a man amongst women talking about feminism. And I do understand the a lot of it is built around a fear of communism or Marxism, but you know, I do get the fear of having these permanent binary classes of oppressor and oppressed. And how, I mean, if you're looking at it from a racial standpoint, communism looks at it from an economic standpoint, but critical race theory looks at it from a racial standpoint. So yeah, you know, if you have, I can get the backlash when you have white permanently in the oppressor class and you have black permanently in the oppressed class. And I can also get it from the standpoint of certain black people is like, well, I don't want my children being taught that they are oppressed or in an oppressed class. But at the same time, you don't necessarily, like that's, there are different facets to critical race theory. Again, these aren't things that you would be teaching to kids anyway. Like it's just trying, like the to me, it's kind of, some of the concepts are kind of complicated. I can't imagine a teacher successfully trying to teach those concepts to kids, nor would I want them to. What I want teachers to do is to teach history from a critical standpoint and not teach history in this black and white type of formula that they've been doing and leaving out very crucial, critical information that would explain why things are the way that they are today. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, because I think a lot of what critical race theory is looking at history squarely, looking at what it is. You know, we had this conversation before. What I was taught in elementary school about the 3/5 Amendment, right? You can go ahead and laugh now because you know the punchline. I was taught that the 3/5 Amendment was the law that when black people got the right to vote, said that each one of their votes was only worth 3/5 of an actual vote. Hence, black people were 3/5 of human beings. So you would need 5 black people to vote a certain way to only get 3 votes, which what I was later to find out was that those votes, the 3/5, were not from black voters, because black people could not vote at the time the 3/5 amendment or 3/5 compromise was made. Those votes, that was to count population. Those votes as electoral votes were then used by the voting populace of that state. At that time, many of them being slave owners. So if you had 15 slaves, right, as a part of your, then that would count as 9 votes for you as a slave owner. So black people were getting their own population counted against them, which I didn't understand because that was taught to me incorrectly in, to be fair, elementary school, right? So, you know, again, if you're teaching history, you know, if you're teaching history to kids, I mean, at the very least, you should be able to talk about these things with truth and nuance, and not have like Texas history books that say things like during the 1600s, they brought workers from Africa to work in the United States. It's slaves and enslaved people and workers are very different things, you know?
Exactly. Or one book said immigrants or something. Yeah, immigrants or something. I wanted, when you said 3/5 of a vote, I wanted to do the Soulja Boy voice. Vote! Vote! Yeah, it's also, you know, the other facet to this being a large number of American citizens for the majority of the country could not vote or were restricted from voting. And it looks like currently we're backsliding back into those old ways. This is what happens, America, when you don't practice good habits, you fall back into bad habits, right? We had a few good years of I wouldn't say, maybe like, three or four good years of protecting those rights and all
they
of
try.
A sudden, yeah, you have to be consistent. All right, so we talked about our opinions on critical race theory. I talked about some of the things that I imagine some people have concerns about, but a lot of those concerns are not justifiable, seeing as how you do not have teachers teaching critical race theory in school. You do have teachers teaching anti-racism in school, or teaching about certain historical events, sometimes not in the most successful way, I can admit, but at the same time, it irks me. because I know exactly why this is a topic now. I know exactly why this is a topic now. And that goes into our second question.
Yeah.
Why now? CRT was developed in the 70s. Why are we talking about it now, JK?
They always need, we need the Republicans. I can't believe I said we. But the right always needs some kind of hot topic, boogeyman issue. You know what I'm saying? Like, last year they had Blue Lives Matter, but it's hard to say Blue Lives Matter once you were seen going upside a cop's head with an American flag trying to beat him to death on the nation's capital. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't,
hey,
it wasn't,
man,
a
that
good
was
look
Antifa.
For the Blue Lives
that
Matter.
That was Antifa. Undercover
that
liberals.
Was Antifa. That's who that was.
That's like, yeah, Antifa. Call. That was y'all cater. That's what that was.
Stormed the Capitol.
Yeah.
No Antifa. So they need things to rally around. That's, even things like abortion. Most, and this is just, I'm a comedian. I'm here to make points often. Not based on facts, but feelings, which is that I'm very sure that most actual Republicans that decide on things, I'm talking about politicians who live in the nation's capital, they don't care about things like abortion. They don't really care, but they know that they can stoke the flames of discontent amongst their base by saying things like, oh, they're killing babies, or they're trying to take prayer out of the schools, like all these like emotional issues. That's because how else are you going to get broke ass white people to fight for rich white people's agendas? I mean, I know I'm painting with broad strokes here, but I mean what I say when I say that. So they need emotional issues, with which to fire people up. And one,
I 100% agree with you, especially that abortion point is a good one, because how many Republicans, politicians have been caught getting their mistresses or individuals that they had consensual sex with abortions because of some accidents that happened. There's a long list of these hypocritical politicians. What I see a lot more is a backlash to the protest and the semblance of progress, not actual progress. I don't consider Nancy Pelosi kneeling down in the kente cloth progress. I consider that performative, but we'll talk about that another time. But you're seeing a backlash to that. It's really tied to a lot of this woke culture, backlash to cancel culture. It's the right one realizing that when it came to mainstream culture, they lost a lot of control, because for a very long period of time, the cultural right controlled who was canceled or not. And all of a sudden, social media gave voices to people who didn't otherwise have them. If you wanted to say your opinion before, you had to actually write to a newspaper or a magazine and hope that they post your editorial. Where now you just go to Twitter and say what you want. And if other people agree with you, they can pile on. And that's what's happening right now. That's the difference. And there's just a lot of people that don't necessarily agree with the way some on the far right perceive the world. But more importantly, I see this huge attempt to withhold progress no matter what. We saw this with Nixon in the 60s when he created the war on drugs. We also saw it with Reagan, Bill Clinton. So my fear is it may be successful. I hope it won't be. But when I listen to a lot of these parents talk about critical race theory, they're not talking about any facet of critical race theory we talked about. They're talking about teaching kids how to actually perceive other people. We've been trying to live in this colorblind world since the civil rights movement, and people have tried to have this perception that racism ended when the civil rights bill passed. Racism ended, like Martin Luther King said, "I have a dream," and then they passed the civil rights bill, and then racism ended. And it's like, you really think that?
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I don't think anybody really believes it. You know what I mean? It's just something that people say, you know, like, you know, I don't see race. I don't care if you're, you know, because the problem is with colorblindness, and this is you're trying to have a colorblind society. If you're actually practicing that, then what you're not seeing is the fact that we do live in different, we do have different experiences based on what we look like, you know? And it's funny, just, I wanted to go back, you know, you're talking about like cancel culture. Yeah, it's very recent. It's a very recent thing. You know, cancel culture has been in the hands, like Colin Kaepernick got canceled like recently.
Yeah.
That's like in the past 5 years, you know?
Colin Kaepernick, I have a joke. You had the That's Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.
They canceled the Dixie Chicks.
Right.
Before canceling was canceled.
I had a joke. Yeah. Yeah. You know, but I mean, that was, it's been cancel culture. Martin Luther King got canceled. Nobody talked about that. You know, it's like, that's what cancel culture has been, you know, but now that it's just like people's voices that are saying, hey, maybe that's not right. And, you know, to be fair, you know, maybe, you know, some of these things do get out of control, you know, in terms of, you know, sometimes there should be some kind of like verification in terms of, I don't know, like what comes to mind, the thing happened with Johnny Depp, for example, but he never got canceled. So you should strike that from the record. You know?
I don't even know what canceling means, to be honest, because these people that they say get canceled, it's like, they still have jobs. They're still making money. They still have their profiles. They may have lost the position they previously had, but again, like I think the example, more recent example, the flashpoint was the woman that was on the Star Wars show, The Mandalorian. You know, it's like she lost her job because she kept pushing that envelope, and Disney was like, "Hey, stop doing that." And then she said something about Jewish people or something relating to Jewish people. And Disney was like, "All right, we tried to tell you. Yeah. If you want to work with us, you got to toe the line. And you didn't want to toe the line, so you got to go." If the person's on your side, people will make excuses. But if the person's not on your side, people are like, "Hey, you should follow the rule. Hey, you know, that's what happens."
It's like losing an endorsement. It's like an athlete losing an endorsement. If a football player punches his wife in the face, knocks her out in the elevator, right? And he loses a Nike endorsement. Nobody goes, "Oh, cancel culture." You go, "Okay, well, he did something that did not represent the interests of the endorsers." No, everybody understands it. You know what I mean? There is no lack of freedom of speech. You can still say whatever you want. And this point has been made a million times. But there's not freedom from consequences, especially when you're in the public eye. You know, and you represent a company. You know what I mean? I don't see janitors getting canceled. You know what I'm saying? So exactly. Anyway.
Let's try it again.
Okay.
Public education. In May, House Republicans denounced it at a Capitol Hill press conference.
Critical race theory is a divisive ideology.
As did former President Trump at the North Carolina GOP convention this month.
The Biden administration is pushing toxic critical race theory and illegal discrimination into our children's schools.
Nationwide, Republican lawmakers are now legislating on the idea. According to EdWeek, as of June 18th, 25 states have introduced bills or taken other steps to restrict education on racism and bias.
Okay, so this right here. This right here is the goal. This is the goal. See, it's a cultural backlash to the police brutality, anti-police brutality protest, which I like to remind people for a second, I still have a Google Drive full of videos of not only the police instigating violence during those protests, but actually engaging in what Amnesty International called human right violations. Human right violations on US soil in 2020. And yet we're sitting here talking about critical race theory. You still have people being killed unjustifiably by police officers. I don't hear anything about Elijah McClain, but we're talking about critical race theory right now. And they are using it. This is the other thing the right does. The right is really good at narrative creation, and they are really good at selling the idea that they're not in control. They don't have any power. The left has taken over and is power hungry and power drunk. Almost 25 states have passed laws against something that is currently not being taught in schools. And all of that, some of these laws are so vague that you can ban talking about basic historical events like mass incarceration.
Yeah, yeah.
Like how Reagan turned the other way and allowed drugs to flow into the country. Yeah. Not only just flow into the country, to flow into the most vulnerable neighborhoods, communities in the country, and did nothing about it except
it's a lot of
go ahead.
No, I just wanted to acknowledge a couple of things you said. Yeah, it's a lot of the sky is falling. It's a lot of, you know, McCarthyism, is the communists are coming, right? So it's a lot of, you know, again, stoking people's fears. And, you know, to go on off the back of something you said before about, you know, last year, the big conversation was police violence, right? Is state sanctioned violence, you know, carried on by the police, especially against Black folks. And what's just happened is that Derek Chauvin, right, was found guilty and he was given 22 years or whatever, right? So now I think they're using this as a time to shift the narrative of like, okay, are you happy? You know, now that that's over with, you know, which personally, I knew he was gonna get thrown under the bus. Because that's what they're able to do is like, okay, there you go. The problems of police brutality are over because this one guy went to jail, you know, and now they're trying to shift the narrative over to this, you know, which is, you know, again, and at the bottom of it, it's just a fear, I think. Well, the fear has to do with demographics, right? I mean, if we're being real, the demographics in the United States are changing rapidly. I think by 2040, white people are going to be a minority in the United States. So there's a deep-seated fear that what formerly marginalized people are going to do is something like what white folks, as a society, as a whole, have been doing to those marginalized folks for, you know, hundreds of years. So now it's like, even looking at history, even
well, why are you bringing up race now? You know, it's like it's they're trying to just do this flip, like that's racist against them, which is
exactly 100%. And it's, they're doing it with critical race theory, but they're also, they did it with the Trump's lie about the election being stolen from them. There's a video of DeSantis talking about how, and back in February, how, you know, Florida had a very secure election. There was no issues, I guess, because Trump carried that state. And yet, a few months later, he still passes a very restrictive voting bill. And I'm like, guys, do we not, like, am I the citizen saying that the emperor is not wearing clothes here? Like, do we not see what's going on? People are having serious debates. And I again, there are, if you're debating critical race theory, fine, have at it. There's elements of it that I think are good, and there's elements of it that I think are you know, can be debated, but we're not really talking about that. We're talking about anti-bias training, anti-racist training that federal government employees and teachers may have to go through, or some of them it's required for them to go through. And again, if you're teaching kids of different races, yes, because for so long we have decided that colorblindness is the path forward without understanding that there are actual structural differences between different demographics of people, whether it be race, class, gender. There are issues that Black people have to go through. For example, hair care, upkeep. You know, there are certain, right, recently, the Olympics banned a certain wave cap for Afro hair. Because according to their justification, you don't, you know, need to, a premier athlete doesn't need a cap of that size. What? Have you seen? Wow. Yeah. Have you seen how, like, our hair can divide? Well, not mine and yours, but.
No, we're pretty safe.
We're safe for that.
A lot of us.
But you have people's hair is very coarse. It defies gravity. When it gets wet, it puffs up. I've heard personal accounts of people being berated at their jobs. I have a mentor who was berated. She's a Navy officer, was berated when she was going through basic count because her hair puffed up when she was doing her swimming trials. There's you have to understand this, and there are a lot of people who don't. There's a lot of things I don't know about someone who may be Muslim. I don't mind going through training to understand certain aspects of their life if I know I'm going to be teaching children who are a part of Muslim families or a part of the Muslim faith. Right? So, it's this desire to
Go ahead.
Well, because I think what they want a complete top-down approach where America, the United States of America, is supposed to be, well, their idea, right? And everyone else is supposed to conform to that rather than understand the experiences of all the constituencies that make up this country. They say, okay, they want it to promote the dominant narrative and we're all supposed to eat it up, right? Like right now it happens to be July 4th. And if we're good Americans, we are supposed to be celebrating the signing of the Declaration of Independence, you know, which, you know, and all these ideals that the United States was supposedly founded on, but hasn't been true for a good amount of the people, majority of the people, you know, when you considered, even if you were white, you had to be a landowner in order to vote back then.
Exactly.
You know? So, yeah. So again, you know, we're supposed to be, they want to be able to teach this historically false narrative and then have us all eat it up, rather than just really understand that we all experience these things differently, and we have different ways of looking at them as a result.
And I the thing that bothers me the most is just how effective this has been. Like, it again, you do not hear people talking about, you do not hear people giving the same attention, the same anger, the same passion to misinformation such as the Lost Cause narrative, which there are some schools in some states, Mississippi, that still teach history with the Lost Cause narrative. I have argued with people here, expats here in Vietnam, that tell me the Civil War was about states' rights. Mm-hmm. States' rights. It was about states' rights. And then every conversation I have with them, I ask
specific
them,
rights, mind you.
Yeah. finish the sentence. Finish it. States' rights to do what? What did they want to do?
What?
Come on. It's mentioned like 23 times in the Confederate Constitution. What is it? What is it?
Just rights. Just the rights. You know, nothing in particular. Just rights. What do you want about? Why do you got to make it about race again?
There you go.
Yeah.
Bringing that race thing into this. Oh, and I can't go without talking about my home state. You're from New York, but even you know, remember the Alamo, right? I think we all know, remember the Alamo.
I mean, how did you forget?
Yeah, it's one of the greatest of all.
It's a great day for marginalized people, if you think about it.
Yeah, it really is.
I remember.
So we were talking about cancel culture earlier. So I figured, why not?
They canceled Custer. Custer was an early victim of cancel culture. General Custer was, that was some cancellation that day. Like, woof.
Yeah.
By a woman, no less. I found that out recently. He got canceled by a woman of color. That is,
that's good.
Cancel culture right there.
There were a few slave masters that were canceled back in the day during the Civil War,
hey,
permanently.
Yeah.
So I
Haiti canceled all of the French.
Yeah,
but the French still won't cancel their debt.
Ooh, now you're bringing up old wounds, man.
For another time.
That's But speaking of remembering the Alamo, since we're talking about the Alamo in Texas, there was the State Museum down there canceled a book event that was going to examine the slavery's role in the Battle of the Alamo. And this is an interesting story because, you know, Governor Greg Abbott, the guy who has sat over quite a few disasters in Texas, and his lapdog, Dan Patrick. I don't know if you remember Dan Patrick from last year. He was the guy that was suggesting that we let Grandma die to save the Dow Jones. So this comedy duo goes ahead and cancels this book event that explores the unfortunate ties that slavery has to the Battle of the Alamo story. We tend to forget why Texas wanted to part ways with Mexico. We also tend to forget which side of the Civil War Texas was on. There's a link to that, and that link is slavery. And we don't talk about that. We don't talk about how Mexico was abolishing slavery. We don't talk about how that didn't necessarily make the landowners or plantation owners of Texas very happy to hear. they also don't talk about the story of Texas Rangers going into Mexican territory to kidnap escaped slaves. We don't talk about that. You know, it's I love Walker, the Texas Ranger, as much as anybody, but I would love to see an old time story where we go back to the 1850s and we see the Texas Rangers get their asses kicked by the black Seminoles.
Right. Right.
What do you think about this?
Also, speaking of kidnapping, kidnapping the president of Mexico and then holding him at gunpoint and getting him to sign off, I think it was Texas, California, Nevada, I believe it was Colorado, New Mexico, right? All these places were Mexico before they kidnapped the president and forced him to sign it over. So yeah, there's a lot of treachery. You know, it's funny, we just celebrated Juneteenth a couple of weeks ago, and you know, and it's celebrated because, you know, supposedly Texas was just slaves didn't know they were free. Like, they didn't read the newspaper, right? When the truth is, you know, they were held, you know, by violence, you know, as they were for the years preceding.
You know, also, don't talk reason, about
that those
the messenger that was, yeah, why the army even had to go down there. There was a messenger that was saying was killed on his way down there, and so it was like, all right, well, we'll just send the army down there if it's going to be that way.
They literally killed the messenger. They literally killed the messenger. They canceled him. They canceled the messenger.
Yeah,
they didn't like his message. They didn't like what he had to say.
Damn cancel culture.
Cancel culture has been in the hands of the right for all of history.
It's hard to look at. You know, and you have members of the right, and of course also the left. We constantly criticize. We constantly criticize China for, you know, revisionist history, you know, hiding parts of the history, you know, things of that nature. And we don't see how we do very similar things here. And we don't see the issues with how we teach history here, how we talk about, you know, even people bring up slavery as if that was the only injustice of, you know, within history. We have a injustice that people talk about right now, police brutality. That is a problem. It is something where we have statistical data that shows it is a problem. Mass incarceration is a problem. And you know what else was a problem? Again, don't talk about this, but it does need to get talked about. How did cocaine flood into this country during the 80s in the way that it did? We don't talk about the Iran-Contra scandal, yeah, nowhere near as much as we should. There's people like, oh, why do you, we need to stop talking about slavery. People are not talking about slavery. They're talking about things that are happening right now. Talking about the PP loans.
Yeah, there's an unbroken line of oppression. Yeah. There's an unbroken line. I mean, you go from slavery, then you go to like the Reconstruction, which, like, you know, again, they tried for a hot minute, right? And then you go to Jim Crow, which is in a lot of ways even more brutal than slavery, just like killing people in the town square, like it's a barbecue, like it's something to see.
Right? Yeah.
You had like over a hundred years of that, right? Then you get to the finally the civil rights movement. Right. And so things are starting to push forward. And then you get to the 70s, again, flooding the inner city, flooding black neighborhoods with heroin and eventually crack cocaine. Right. So then the 90s, mass incarceration, to the 2000s, you know, extrajudicial killings of black folks by the police. And so there's never been an end to it. There's never been like, okay, we're good. Even the 4 years we were talking about earlier, there's never been an end. It just takes different forms, you know, and every time there's a push forward, there's an even stronger resistance to the progress.
And that's exactly what we're seeing right now. We're seeing resistance to progress because it's undeniable that we have issues currently now. And just last year, we saw issues with the PPE loans that were not going to minority businesses. You had minority businesses that will never be able to come back, that will never be able to recover, and they were not receiving the financial justice, well, not financial justice, but the financial restitutions that the government was giving out specifically to small businesses. They weren't receiving them. They were not receiving them. And that's a problem. We have the other example.
It's like the GI Bill. It's like all the times when there was, you know, there people were given, you know, white folks were given money to open businesses, loans to buy homes, you know, land, property for free. And then you wonder why there's such income inequality, you know, when it comes to race. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I always think of like, and then you have, then if you have a successful Black person, right, you have like a celebrity or a sports figure, you know, for every Oprah Winfrey, there's like millions, like literally millions of people of Black folks who don't have it like that, right? Exactly. But the thing is, they have these, you know, these examples where you can kind of go, okay, see, there you go. But it kind of, I always think of the analogy, it reminds me of, I used to work in the casino gaming industry. And when you're sitting at a blackjack table and one person gets blackjack and they're like, yeah. And that's what you see in the commercial. When you see a commercial for a casino, you see the winners. They'd be like, yeah. But they never show you the other seven people at the table who are just losing all night. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So yeah, that's because it just doesn't, it doesn't look good in the commercial.
And they've done that. They have done that at every stage, I would say, of American history. Like they did that in slavery. They did that during the Jim Crow era. Hey, look at this guy. Why can't you do it? Why can't you be successful? He's successful. It's like, right. You don't see these barriers. You think every Interest. Single person is supposed to cross all these barriers and hurdles you put in front of them? Like it's not going to work like that. You know, the other example, another recent example, this isn't recent, but this is connected to history. Black farmers and their fight for just being able to receive funding from the government that other farmers have received for years now. And their payments were paused because white farmers made a big deal about it. Like, why is this money only going to Black farmers?
Or farmers.
It's like, well, that's because historically, whenever there were stipends that were handed out to farmers, Black farmers were excluded. I read a report that estimated, they estimate Black farmers lost around $176 billion of wealth. And since, you know, from basically since 1870 to today, 90% of Black farmland has been lost.
Wow.
So I just, what dude, I like, but we're talking about CRT. Okay. We're talking about CRT. We have.
No, but that's the thing. Even when you're using CRT, you know, you have to go and examine, you know, these different ways in which people are affected, you know, just because of their genealogy, you know. So it sounds like we're off topic, but we're actually not. We're kind of using CRT because we're talking about the law. We're talking about, you know, laws, you know, that have been in place to say subsidize farming, right?
No, but we're talking about CRT. Not us, but I meant like they're talking about CRT as being this like evil thing that needs to be crushed, where it's like, no, we have all these these examples today of injustices today.
Right.
And it's out of the lexicon. It's out of their minds. It's not a factor. And I don't, people ask, we talk about, you know, America improving in race relations. There's always this conversation. My last question to you is, considering what's happening right now, considering that you have Republican state legislators that are using this issue to like shove in legislation that could prevent teachers from talking about subjects that certain politicians don't want teachers talking about. And this, again, this is going to affect the next generation of voters. What do you see? How do you see race relations going over the next 10 to 15 years within U.S.? Do you think things are going to progress, or do you think that, you know, we're going to see the 1980s all over again?
It's funny you ask this, because we keep referring to like this place, how things are going to go here, but if I could just, we live in Vietnam. You know what I'm saying? We live in Saigon, Vietnam. So like when I look at him, I have a lot of hope for the United States. I have a lot of hope for the people of the United States and for the progress that's going to get made there. At the same time, I often feel like I'm one of those guys in a photo. You ever see the photos of the nuclear test sites that they had like back in the 1940s when they're in a desert and they're kind of looking at it through binoculars like, wow. That is something. Look at that. You know, like at a like minimum safe distance. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to say. I mean, you know, there is a lot of progress that's being made in terms of the way people are thinking, you know, and that the way the narrative is changing, you know. And I think eventually there is going to be progress, you know, especially when you see things are becoming way more obvious. Things are becoming, even people who thought things like white privilege, you know, 10 years ago, you know, the narrative, it changed from, what do you mean white privilege? I'm not even rich. You know what I mean? So white folks like really reacting that way.
I think are you that, supposed to be?
You know, when you see, right, exactly. You know, I think it was Chris Rock. Chris Rock said equality will be achieved when Black people can be just as mediocre as white folks and achieve the same amount of success. You know, and I don't think we're there yet. You know? You have to be exceptional, you know? Yeah. You know, but you know, with all that said, a lot of progress, because a lot of the hypocrisy is being exposed as well. You know, you were talking about the Black Lives Matter protest last year and the reaction by the police, like police in riot gear and paramilitary equipment, you know, lined up all over the Capitol, you know, for pretty much a peaceful protest. Whereas, you know, who I earlier referred to as what do I call him again? Notifa, right? Antifa, the Notifa, or what else do they call him? Y'all-Qaeda. Anyway, Y'all-Qaeda. The people that stormed the Capitol, right? But those folks, those crazy white folks that stormed the Capitol, and it was just like, hey, come right in, to the point that, you know, people like prominent politicians could have lost their lives that day. You know, so I think that the hypocrisy is getting to be to the point that people, you know, even older people are kind of waking up to it. Older white folks are starting to see that, you know, there's something going on here. And never mind the younger people, you know, because young folks, it's very hard. It's very difficult to bullshit young folks. You know what I mean? We have a particular way of seeing things from not having been indoctrinated for as long, you know, and I think that's a great part of the pushback against critical race theory as well. You know, it's like if you educate people when they're young about the reality of the environment they live in, you know, it's hard to turn the clock back on that, so to speak. So, you know, I think there are some difficult years to come. But I think at the end of the day, progress is going to be made.
So to summarize, you're hopeful of progress, but you're going to be watching from afar.
I'm way over here. I got my binoculars. You can do it, America. Oh, damn. Stay in the fight. Keep hope alive. I'll be here.
Most interesting, like, very interesting point you made. It reminded me of a line D.L. Hughley said, and he probably wasn't the one that invented it. I just heard him say it first. You know, if you've been privileged for so long, equality starts to feel like oppression. And like it's what we're seeing is that, yeah, it's I'm not able to get the same amount of results I was getting, but I don't realize I was only getting those results because, well, not only getting those results, but the big reason why I was getting the results I was getting was because of the way other people perceive me in relations to how people perceive people with darker skin or of other ethnicities. And I think that's the big point people need to remember. It's not just about, oh, I'm white, so therefore I'm this bad person. It's not about that. It's about how we as a society view each other based on our skin tones. It's about how the police view you in relation to how they view me and how relations they would view me to a darker skinned Black person. There's colorism at play as well as a factor. I may not get the same amount of discrimination that someone with darker skin would get. And I even realized that. So it's, sure. We have to get to a point where it's not only about you, bro. It's not just about you, sis. There's other people in this game. And we do need to start thinking more critically beyond just ourselves.
Yeah.
When we're talking about how we can improve.
And if I can add to that a little bit.
Go ahead.
I can add to that, like we got to decide, we got to figure out as a society, where is this a zero sum game? Because I don't think it is. I don't think that marginalized people doing better necessarily means that people who have not are, you know, have to suffer or are going to do worse. You know, I think society improves when you don't have as many people suffering. You don't have as many people pushed to the margins. You don't, for example, you don't have as much crime if everybody gets to eat. You know what I'm saying? And there's no reason why it shouldn't be that way. And so then the reaction to that is like, oh, you're talking about communism. No, I'm talking about humanism, you know? And so again, what I wanted to say was that we got to figure out that it's not a zero sum game. You know, just because you're here and I went from here to here doesn't mean that you're losing anything, you know?
And you can't call it communism.
That has to be acknowledged.
And you can't call it communism if you're talking about having the same things that countries like Germany and the UK have. They're not communist countries. So I think that's nonsense. That's a nonsense argument people keep making anyway.
Right.
But yeah, that's a great final point. I just hope that we can get to a point where we can actually talk honestly and truthfully about these issues. And also, you know, come together and realize, hey, listen, there are problematic politicians on both sides of the aisle. Like, while we're talking about police brutality, we also know that Black women face higher mortality rates when it comes to giving birth. A lot of that has to do with the lack of access to quality healthcare, that healthcare is tied to jobs. And if you have a low-paying job, that means that you're gonna have a lower quality healthcare. And again, we don't talk about how people like my good old friend Jim Clyburn, who endorsed Biden, you know, how much money he gets from pharmaceutical companies, and how we even people that look like us sometimes don't have our best interests at heart in politics. And if we can, you know, start to remove the racial division, start to see each other, like not only appreciate the differences, but embrace the differences, see each other as human beings, and then look at these politicians and say, hey, listen, guys, you've been running this game on us for quite some time. Now the gig is up. It's time for you to actually do what you're in office to do. Things could be better.
Yeah.
But
once people get together, you know, and really unite as people, you know, based on the our spirits, you know, and based on what is good for humanity, then we can make proper decisions about who to put in the guillotines. Because right now there's just so much confusion, you know. So we gotta come to a consensus.
as people, let's get it together, okay?
I don't condone guillotines.
I'm a comedian, by the way. Look me up on J.K. Hobson.
Let them know. Let the people know how they can reach you, J.K.
Instagram, J.K. Hobson. On YouTube.
Don't send that hate.
Leave a comment.
All right.
Oh, I don't fuck with comments, man. I stay out of the comment section.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this podcast. I'll try to make more. And thank you, JK, for joining me today. And hopefully we'll be able to talk about other issues in the future.
Thank you, Turner. Cheers, man.
Cheers.